You are listening to Art Satsang, a podcast that explores the complex and exciting ideas that emerge when art and physics meet.
CERN is the largest physics lab in the world, home to the Large Hadron Collider. And for the past decade, Arts at CERN has been fostering dialogue between artists and physicists through residencies and commissions. I'm Ana Prendes, content producer at Arts at CERN.
And I'm Monica Bello, curator and head of Arts at CERN. Today we are looking at some of the big theories around black holes.
It was just this idea that the whole universe and us may exist in more than one dimension at the same time in different places.
Sometimes you need to get lost to find a new way to describe things. And physicists generally don't like getting lost or feeling lost.
Joining me is Alessandra Necchi, a physicist working in the theoretical department at CERN from 2017 to 2020. During the time, she met the artist Susan Trister, whose work looks at the relationship between new technologies, society, and the potential futures of humanity. Susan was an artist in residence at CERN in 2018, but her interest in physics and black holes goes back much further. I started by asking her when she first became interested in physics and black holes.
Actually, I was really interested in physics at school, and I started having a few theories of my own at the time, but I didn't pursue it then. So it was in 2014, perhaps, when I saw this documentary on television, which was about this holographic theory of the universe. And I literally couldn't believe what they were saying, that because of the theories around the idea of a black hole, the event horizon around a black hole, they had surmised that any object or information or data going into that black hole, any three-dimensional object, would leave a two-dimensional version of itself on this event horizon. And from that, they were extrapolating that reality is holographic. It was just this idea that the whole universe and us may exist in more than one dimension at the same time in different places. And so I think it was about a few years later, I was asked by an American publisher for her blog to present like a crazy theory I'd had that was kind of untestable or something. And she was asking other artists and writers. And so I put forward this theory that, in fact, the whole of art history had been an attempt to describe this holographic reality that was intuited somehow by artists. And it was only when I was invited to do my CERN residency that I thought, hey, maybe I can actually test this theory. So that was the basis of my residency.
I'm curious to know how Alessandra sees and responded to your theory. So, Alessandra, what is your take on this theory that Susan was proposing about the holographic theory and the and the, in relation to your own investigation?
Well, first of all, it's a great artists that are also interested in these holographic ideas. Well, let me start by saying maybe that when light crosses the event horizon of a black hole, it can no longer be seen by outside of the black hole. And so there's this problem for physicists of describing the black hole states without being able to follow what has fallen through the event horizon. And somehow, thanks to even the work, since the work of Hawking, we know that the black hole entropy is given by the area of this event horizon, which is somehow not the whole volume, not the whole region where the black hole is, just the area. And so there is this idea that somehow maybe all the information contained in the black hole is holographically described on this surface. And for physicists, developing this holographic idea has been one of the major areas of research of modern high energy physics and quantum gravity research. And it's become very, very powerful. So these like tool that is this holographic region where we can describe the black hole, even at the quantum level, is one of the greatest ideas in physics recently. So I was very, very excited to meet an artist that was going to tackle these ideas.
Susan, you arrive to CERN with a theory, and there is a goal, there is an objective. Yeah, this mystery that you are considering, and that you, how did you express that to the physicist, to Alessandra, and to the colleagues in the theory department?
Well, I decided to approach the theorists by asking them for their version of this theory, so that before we talked about my theory, I'd have a sense of how they saw it. And that was very interesting because it obviously expanded enormously everything that I'd read about. And they were talking about things like this hypothetical boundary that you could never reach, which contained the two-dimensional data of us, perhaps, and everything. They talked about the fact that possibly our planet, Earth, may actually be inside a black hole. And the only way of ever reaching this boundary to test whether or not two-dimensional versions of us were there would be if we were, in fact, inside a black hole, because the event horizon of that black hole that we'd have come through would be potentially reachable. And then so I asked questions like, so if we were inside a black hole, well, what would that mean? And the scientists said, nothing. Wouldn't mean it wouldn't make any difference to us, because obviously we wouldn't. We're fine, yeah, well, as far as we are. And, well, there was a great many things that were talked about and discussed. And then at the end of each interview, I broached my theory. So on the basis, so I led into it through what they were saying. And in most cases, they were theoretically in agreement with me, which was very exciting. And so then when we'd finished the interview, I asked them to do some drawings, watercolors, visualizing their understanding of this theory, which was also really revealing, and they were all incredibly different. And so that was like the first stage. That was like the kind of preliminary stages I went through. But the actual artwork idea I'd had to actually test my theory was something different. So in a sense, these first bits weren't the artwork. They were preliminaries around the artwork. But the artwork itself was this video I made where I wanted to echo the methodology of the Large Hadron Collider, which accelerates particles incredibly fast in order to carry out the tests. So in order to carry out my test, I accelerated art history at 25 images a second, because you have 25 frames a second on video. And so I collected a chronological images from cave painting through to contemporary art. So with 25,000 images, which I accelerated in a time frame of 16.54 minutes. And these images, so they flashed by and they were projected with a boundary of a circle, so that you only saw the circle of the center of the images, like a simulated event horizon. So it appeared as if you were kind of traveling through a black hole and all these images were either coming towards you or going away from you. And it created a kind of hypnotic effect. So you would watch this video, this large video projection in a darkened room sitting down. And the idea was that each viewer would be hypothetically testing my theory in terms of their own experience of this accelerated kind of particle art history thing.
I find it really interesting to see how this whole theory, this theoretical framework, is visualized later on in the exhibition space, as Susan, you just described. And I'm curious to understand what was in the scientist's mind when you came up with this idea, let's draw these watercolors to picture ideas that are very complex. In fact, physicists at CERN and use maths to understand what happens inside a black hole. So, Alessandra, can you tell us more about this process of research and what tools you use to imagine this phenomenon, which is very, very complex?
Yes. So our framework of work is usually very rigorous in mathematical terms, and physicists are very proud of their complex mathematical theories. I mean, with complexity comes the power of understanding more and more complicated systems, in particular black hole states. In particular, thanks to this holographic correspondence, we study the evolution of black holes, and the power of these methods is that on the holographic screen, there is no gravity. And theories without gravity are the theories we've tested at LHC, and thanks to the experiments, we know them quite well. So being able to transfer a problem that's really hard, like understanding black holes and quantum black holes, into a setup that we control well, like quantum field theories. It's possible thanks to the holographic screen is what physicists are using nowadays. And we're very excited for this research. I have to say that going from this rigorous setup to interacting with an artist, it made our minds explode. It was really entering an uncomfortable space where our safety net of mathematical systems and theorists was completely taken away from us. And this feeling of uncomfortable became sweeter and sweeter the more we let ourselves go into a completely different way of approaching and even asking questions. And even though maybe at the beginning we questioned, like, why do we have to do this? I think that it was very, very inspiring to let ourselves go to a different kind of question, different kind of possibilities, being freed from our mathematical rigor and finding ourselves again in a setup that was not predictable at all, thanks to Suzanne's questions and prompts. In the end, in physics, what matters is the measures, is what we can measure, what we can test. And so in the end, there's always some tangible experience that has to come up. And that is definitely a meeting point with the artist's perspective.
This is a fantastic answer. And you said something like they offered you a chance to escape from the rules of physics and find creative ways to approach your research. But now you are talking about the experience, the need to engage into this experience of these complex notions as black holes. Only recently, a black hole was paradoxically photographed, and everyone in the world saw this image of the black hole. So it became part of our life and our experience. How this image changed for you, Alessandra?
Yes, I have to say both the detection of gravitational waves a few years ago and the striking image that you're talking about really brought black holes into our lives. They are a part of our universe, and there's so much research going on to understand how much we can learn about them directly. And for me, it definitely motivates more my research. I don't know, seeing something, seeing the black hole picture means really seeing what you're working on, what you really want to try to understand. And it makes it definitely worth all the complications that we can see and all the little details of the theory we need to figure out to really make sense of these fantastic systems that are somehow at the core of our universe.
So let's go back to this idea of seeing things or imagining things. During the residency of Suzanne, you invite a small group of scientists, mainly theoretical physicists, to employ the same techniques you use in your work. What did you ask them? Because you asked them to do watercolors, but what was the process? So the questions that triggered the answers that became drawings on paper?
Well, basically, when they'd been describing the theory to me as they understood it, they used a lot of terminology, and the terminology seemed to reference various different types of things, like this boundary and the bulk, and there's a whole bunch of words that they were using for things which are not in the everyday language. And so what I was asking them to do in their watercolors was to actually make visualizations of those things and how they connected, and these processes, how and where we were in relation to this boundary, and how this holographic principle could be visualized. So in Alexandra's drawing, she did one drawing actually where on the left-hand side she had a human being. And then you saw how that basically turned into a mathematical equation on a boundary.
Yeah, it was not easy, Suzanne.
No.
To translate into images what our theories tell us. I can talk more about this if you'd like.
Yes, describe your watercolors that you did, because I think we'll see them online. They can be seen online, and then people can hear your explanation.
Yeah, so I wanted to represent this transition between one region, which is the universe as we know it. That's where I drew this person. And so in this part of the left part of the drawing, we have to think about that as as the universe as we know it, with the stars, the planets, the people. And if we want to reach the holographic screen, we somehow need to slowly get rid of these description of our universe as we know it. And this is represented in this person losing somehow its figure and becoming something different. And on the right, which is the region of the holographic screen, I wanted to represent the new description of this figure in terms just of quantum fields. On the right, I've written some quantum states, superposition of states, correlators. These are all things that help us describe theories like the quantum theories we test at the LHC. And this is the language that we need to use when we are on the holographic screen, because there is no gravity there. And this was the idea of this drawing, of really losing our current or common knowledge of the universe to reach the holographic screen and see it becoming completely a new language. And maybe let me stress the fact that it is very important that the screen has no gravity, because the theories that, thanks to CERN experiments and high energy experiments, theories that we've tested very well, we can also use in our explanation of phenomena. And gravity, we don't really control it at the quantum level very well. We're still trying to understand it better.
Do you think that through this holographic principle theory, that you'll be able to, that at CERN or elsewhere, people will be able to finally solve this problem of quantum gravity, which, as far as I understand, is the stumbling block to the standard model of physics?
Yes, physicists are relying a lot on this holographic principle to tackle the problem of quantum gravity. And this is really the big jump, going, as you're saying, from the standard model to a unified theory of all interactions we know. And that is why there's so many theorists in the theory department at CERN.
Are you optimistic that this will be figured out?
There's been so much progress in the last few decades on this direction, and also thanks to the holographic principle, that yes, there's already a lot of progress, and we have been able to connect the problems of quantum gravity with problems in quantum information theory, and there's so much to explore that I'm definitely optimistic.
And what do you think will be the implications for our kind of greater understandings of the universe?
I would say they're inimaginable. I think that it's definitely going to bring a lot of connections in the fundamental understanding of how we use quantum interactions, how we understand black holes. So maybe even an astrophysics point of view, I cannot predict technological applications, but definitely so much into research is technological advances that it's one of the fundamental problems theoretical physicists need to tackle.
If you had to imagine a technological outcome, what might it be?
In communications, probably. Understanding better how information is encoded in quantum systems. The most recent developments are suggesting that in black hole evolution, some information is encoded in regions of space which are physically disconnected from the far away regions. So any detector of gravitational waves would be physically disconnected from certain parts of the black hole that still contain information about the evaporation of black holes. And we are puzzled by this. We don't understand physically why they should, this region should exist, but they have somehow brought us to solve the problem of somehow unitary black hole evaporation. And this is one of the greatest recent developments. So I think that understanding quantum information is probably one of the most direct applications of understanding quantum gravity.
Can I ask you a question, going back to the framework of CERN and how artists and scientists interact? Susan, you are very knowledgeable and very interested in science fiction. And can you expand a bit in how science fiction is important in your work?
All right, so I suppose science fiction has been important in my work for quite a long time. If I go back to 1964, when I was five, I made a drawing at school, and you had to write a diary and put an image by it. And I drew a space rocket, and I drew a picture of myself. And at the top, I wrote, "I want to go to the moon in Fireball XL5. Fireball XL5 was a TV show at the time. And so I guess looking back, I realized that I didn't have a choice. Since then, I was always obsessed about these kind of things, about the future, really. And this was before man had landed on the moon, obviously, when I did this diary edition. And so more recently, very recently, I suppose my Survivor F project is an imaginary project about a kind of hallucinatory moment in the future in a kind of post-human environment where maybe there are no human beings, maybe there are only machines, maybe there is just one survivor of the human race, which may be a woman, maybe a machine, and this entity produces images which it sends back to us in the present day. And then after that was The Escapist, Black Hole Space Time. The Escapist is another kind of imaginary entity who possibly lives inside a black hole, who has very many strange experiences with their own self and what that might be, and kind of postulates all kinds of scenarios which are totally outside of our experience. I try to imagine what it might be like, feel like, to be something living inside a black hole that may not even be human.
Can I ask a question, Susan, about this escapist? Does he communicate with us or?
Well, there were 52 episodes in his comic strip. I don't think he actually communicated with human beings, but he does communicate with things like trees or other planets. And I can just read you a few excerpts because it's very abstract. So let's say in episode 6, the comic strip goes, "The escapist, looking out of his black hole, wonders why there are suddenly two event horizons encircling his view out into space. One looked purple, the other blue. Where was time in all this? Were these colors a two-dimensional version of himself? When had he become one with the black hole? He realized he had no idea what he looked like or where he had come from." In Escapist number 14, the escapist finds himself, where? On the interverse, which is a time period during which the internet and the universe have become one. The interverse reminds him of an enormous tree of life. And the final one I would like to quote from is The Escapist 21. "A tree on Earth sends a signal to a tree in a parallel universe. The signal goes through the brain of the escapist, causing him to emit light rays, which illuminate the cosmos, triggering belief systems on 3 million inhabited planets."
Wow, that's beautiful. I really like this perspective of using the information, using the knowledge, the mathematical setup, the physical description, and bringing it to an experience. Researchers, we want to be able to make sense of things, and we're missing sometimes this like, and then what? After we've explained this, what happens? And I think that the artist can really make an experience out of it. And that is wonderful, I think.
I think stories are very important, and because with the stories, you imagine how you can experience these ideas that are often so out of the world. And to think of this opening as matching your work is this important, is this fundamental in opening these portals to the viewers, to the public?
Well, yes, the main point. I mean, it's about communication. It's like, you know, you write a book and you expect, you know, you hope people to read it. Yeah, I mean, as a teenager, I always wanted to save the world. You know, it's my big mission. I don't know about saving humanity anymore. I mean, there's so much crap out there. But it's about trying to open up people's minds. Yeah, open, you know, broaden people's minds, trying to create possibilities for people to think differently, think more openly, think more constructively, positively, try to create a better future, really.
What about you, Alessandra? Are scientists meant to change the way we see the world, to inspire us, but also to transform society and humanity?
Yes, and I think I can totally agree with Susan that the communication is important. We tend to, as scientists or researchers, we tend to compete to be the first to get a new great idea or discover something. And we don't have to forget that we also need to transmit these new discoveries to the rest of our community, to the rest of the world. And we're seeing nowadays how crucial it is that we can communicate science to the whole society, and we need to make an effort to make our results accessible. In the end, I think it's all about finding a new perspective. And for me, as a scientist, was really interacting with an artist meant getting lost in an idea. And sometimes you need to get lost to find a new way to describe things. And physicists generally don't like getting lost or feeling lost. And so interactions with artists are a really nice and stimulating experience that physicists would never think about.
And just to finalize this really amazing conversation with the two of you, Susan, a friend artist told me once that he would like to go to come to CERN to see his practice with the eyes of others, other people from different fields. Is that your case? Did you get this urge, this desire to see your practice with the eyes of experimental and theoretical physicists?
No, I didn't actually, because I didn't imagine that they would want to. I didn't imagine they would be interested in seeing my other work. Only one of them that asked me to describe, you know, where I was coming from, who I was. That was a much more senior guy, because he was a bit more reluctant to speak before he knew exactly what I was about. And I gave him a whole potted history of my work, and his brain seized up. He said, "I can't take all that. That there's too much for me to take in right now," or something like that. I have no idea whether any of the theorists actually went and researched my work and came to any conclusion. That I would, in retrospect, be very interested to know what they thought.
I remember that we had the first meeting at lunch, and you had brought a book with your work on tarot cards, and I remember, maybe it is a funny story, I remember asking you, like, because you were explaining your previous work, and I was asking you, like, oh, did you meant to do these, or this was meant in this direction? And you could, like, calmly always reply, no. So, no, I would not get what you were doing. And I remember that being sort of like, oh, it's a very different way of thinking, which made it very striking, but still very, very interesting. So, yeah, if there's going to be other chances in the future, I would love to.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, be great.
Thank you to Alessandra Necchi and Susan Trister for that really cool conversation.
In our final episode next week, we look at broken symmetries with choreographer Wendy Su and physicist Tamara Vázquez de Schroda. Subscribe to Arts at CERN, wherever you get your podcast, to hear all 6 episodes.
This podcast is produced by Reduced Listening. The producer is Rebecca Gaskell, and the executive producer is Jack Howson. I'm Monica Bello.
And I'm Ana Prendes. Thanks for listening.